This is Chris Marishan with Farmers Insurance. Are you sick and tired of calling your insurance agent
six
times before they pick up or reply to an email? We'd love the opportunity to earn your business. Do you own a home, a car, a small business?
It's great to see our babies are all grown up, and they're all grown up, and they're all grown up.
We want to hear from you.
Call in.
Big man.
And women. This is Chris Marishan with Farmers Insurance. For a quote, text Chris to 41411. That's 41411.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
Now, this is Jimmy Olsen's glue, not Pocket Full Kryptonite. The name of the song, even though he keeps saying Pocketbook Kryptonite. It's Big Spin Doctors Friday here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After.
As it should be. I'm
sure this is resonating with our audience born in the 1990s. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After, CBS Sports 105.7, HD2 FM 920 AM inside STL.com. We're live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Our intern Matt is here. Matt, could you come to the Plow Braves microphone? Are you familiar with the Spin Doctors? Were you familiar with the Spin Doctors before this segment? Because my guess is you're 21.
I am 21, mm-hmm. And not really. I knew the Prince song you played, but that was about it.
Yeah.
But you heard. What do you like to listen to now, the young man? What's going on?
I don't really know. I like a lot of rap music, honestly. Yeah. Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine is kind of like, that's kind of old school relative for a 21-year-old.
Yeah, that's probably. Probably the most old school thing I listen to, honestly.
How's that make you feel, Charlie, to hear Rage Against the Machine is old school?
I love Rage Against the Machine, so I am.
You and Tom Morello are fast friends.
I always liked their sound, and I like Tom Morello. Now, he's very political.
Yes, he is.
A little too political for me.
Yeah.
But in terms of guitarists, he's got to be up there.
No.
One of the best.
What about Bobby Goldsboro? Are you listening to much of
this? Is one of the references where I don't get it, and if I don't get it, I'm certain that nobody else here gets it.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
Well, Google him. Great songs. Watching Scotty grow.
He was like a neighbor on My Three Sons.
Watching Scotty grow. Can you tell Plowsy if he's not hearing me? Watching Scotty grow by Bobby Goldsboro, because I'm going to hip you guys to something you're really going to like, and you're going to put it in
all
your
right.
collection.
I'll buy it. I wonder if it's 99 cents or $1.29, though.
You can listen to it, and you will not even know that this was a song that was popular back in 1963.
Well, let's do a poll, and I think this is why the Spin Doctors have kind of stood the test of time in terms of
have
those
they
songs.
Really?
No, here's what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're the greatest rock
band
of all time.
You could see them at Casino Queen for a dollar.
Okay, but here's the test. If you're flipping through the channels, and you hear those three songs that we played this morning, I'm not changing the channel.
I'm honestly changing the
I'm
channel.
Not.
I am.
Cat, are you? I think those songs are good enough
to them.
That you're gonna listen through.
But I'm an old guy. I just added those two songs to my iTunes.
Look at that. This is Bobby Cole.
There he sits with a pen and
yeah,
a
yellow sounds.
Man.
It does sound right? like something from the last decade.
What a handsome lad. That's my boy.
I like
to put some man singing about his son.
Little trumpet.
B-R-L-F.
Listen to this.
Spells mom and dad. Well, that ain't too bad.
A different world. A different world,
see, this
sir.
This is music.
This is pre-November 1963. It was an innocent time. The end of the innocence. Don Henley, think about it.
And he doesn't even really sing. But he's great.
Yeah, he's kind of the first rapper. He doesn't get enough credit.
Like, if this song came out right now, would it be popular at all? Because it
should
be. But it should be.
It's a beautiful song about a guy who sang, before my son, I didn't have any.
Building blocks and a cardboard box.
Good lyrics.
He had a cardboard
this,
box.
Wait, this will make you laugh. Watch this.
Mickey Mouse says it's 13 o'clock.
Wonderful.
13 o'clock.
Quite a shock.
It's a shock.
That's my boy.
Delightful.
In 4 short years, I've gone.
This is why I like the cat, because I would never have been exposed to this song probably ever in my life.
It's like lunch with your grandfather.
Yeah.
So let it rain on my
this is a good tune.
I got my own rainbow, and we're sitting here shining, watching okay. Scotty grow.
Bobby Gott, Goldsboro. Put him on your list.
Download that, Charlie.
Wait.
Riding on Daddy's
Daddy
shoulders, off to bed.
Old sleepy head.
Okay. That's my boy.
He loves his song.
And this is for, it's for real 1960?
I think so, if memory serves.
God, I could put action. I feel like I could diversify my investment by putting a little action on the 1950s.
But when you, you know, to me,
it like, feels 50s.
I remember that song from when I was a little kid, and for some reason it resonates. So I'm on my iTunes. I have a lot of songs from, you know, when I was just a kid to all the way through 1984.
1971, Tim.
Thanks.
71? Wow. Post-Woodstock.
Contemporary.
Wow. That must have been a Nixon influence. What in the world? 71? Was there some kind of irony to it, or was he just being as sincere as the day is long?
He sang sort of an emotional song. He saw there was a song called Honey where he was singing about his wife who had died.
Oh, my God. Did his wife really pass?
I don't know.
Plowhawk, I need you on that. You're having a big show today.
But he was so popular, he got a
Time
variety show.
820.
Back in the day, if you were a recording artist that was popular, you got a variety show on network TV. Yeah, right. He had one, I think, for one season.
Yeah, that song, to me, it did kind of have like a Donny Osmond-type feel.
Yeah, that stuff was going on in the 70s, right? Boy, him and Marie are still performing in Las Vegas every night.
And how about Marie? Marie looks pretty good. She's doing all the commercials for the weight loss and such. She's looking good. What is she? How old is she, Kat?
I'm going to guess 54.
I'm going to say 3.
Might be older than 54. Bobby Goldsboro, the cat, is 75.
He's music royalty. I'm sure the texters appreciated hearing that.
Let me take a look. I haven't been all that active in the text inbox. I went, what the hell am I listening to? If I played Major League Baseball, this would be my walk-up song.
Maybe I can get that done.
You know, the Matt Holliday Lemmings T-shirt was, of course, blamed in some circles for the 7-0 loss yesterday. But I want people to keep in mind that in 2011, Colby Rasmus stepped up to the plate and played Joshua's Love Circus Boyfoy. And sure, it ended the hottest streak of his hitting career as a Cardinal.
And they played it twice accidentally.
But remember, 3 months later, the Cardinals were world champions. So when the Cardinals win the World Series in 2016, which is currently 33-1 in Las Vegas, so you might as well ship a small taste on that, remember Matt Holliday putting on that Lemmings T-shirt at Great American Ballpark for an 11:35 start local time when the Cardinals lost 7-0 against the great Mario Soto.
And also, Finnegan. Marie Osmond will be 57 in October.
I had 54. I was a little closer than I thought.
Kat, 57.
Thought she was going to be a little older. I'm so hard right now. That's from not a St. Gabe's fan. John Denver. Don't know what that means. Ray King sending in pictures. Hey, Tim, great lineup today. Thanks, Barnhart Brawler. Tom Glavin. I mean, it's kind of simple, but I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. Just turned 50 a few months ago.
Maybe he meant us three because he doesn't like Doug and his political views. I think that's
you're 100% right.
Can we get away from – can we just get away
We didn't talk politics at all yesterday.
I don't care that we talk. I just – the more and more I see it, it's almost like you put on your team jacket and you're ready for a fight.
But you truly seem like you are not sure.
I am leaning.
Whereas I feel like, honestly, for the last decade, you've said you're not sure, but you were sure. Now I really feel like you're not sure, and you're not sure.
Because I'm not a never-Trumper, you know, not one of those guys. I just think both candidates are so awful. But I do see what Doug says. I do think, you know, when they talk about balance of power, right, and you talk about the separate, you know, you have the executive branch and the judicial branch, there is also a media branch that is just important in our society. And from my view, the media branch is all in on Hillary.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm legitimately curious this because one of the things that's a bit frustrating and perhaps why I like Essie Cupp is because I don't know what she's going to say. And I'm not saying like she's like a wild card because I don't really know what the hell Donald Trump's going to say either. But I consider her to be, you know, obviously, I think it's obvious anyway, she's quite intelligent. So I don't know which direction she's going to go. And therefore, I give her opinion more, in my mind, credibility. Because it doesn't seem like she's bought and paid for and you already know what she's going to say and she's going to, you know, do the talking points. Who right now, the cat? And Charlie, I'll go to you as well, even though I know you're focused on the spin doctors right now. But who right now, in your mind, when you think of an unbiased media source, and I'm not talking about an outlet, I'm talking about a journalist, who comes to mind?
I think everyone's biased.
No, that's the texters as well.
I think everyone's biased. I do like Charles Krauthammer, who's a conservative, but he hates Trump. So you really don't know how he's going to weigh in on certain issues. I think he's a brilliant guy.
Wasn't he the one? Well, he wasn't necessarily the one, but wasn't he, or was it another guy on Fox News who was certain that Mitt Romney was going to win?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't watch a lot of Fox News, even though that's the if you're a progressive and someone disagrees with you, they say, "Oh, what did you see that on Fox News?" I honestly,
I wasn't doing that. I was asking who it was. I can't recall who it was. I just think he's a different guy.
A smart guy. Fox too? And he doesn't always just throw in with what the Republicans say or
never comes in studio.
We should get him in here.
No, not our studio, O'Reilly's studio.
Yeah, why would he? Yeah, he's got enough going on. I just think he's a really smart guy. And when I watch him on the panels with other, and no one can really take him on in a debate because he's that smart. I don't agree with everything he says. I just think he's the smartest guy in the
world. I'm going to agree with S.E. Cup with what Tim said. I don't agree with all of her views. But she does come out there and say she is a conservative. She's against Trump. But I think when I watch her, and they had her on a lot for both conventions, I just feel like she's pretty fair.
Well, that's the question. What I like. Somebody just texted an SC Cup's a Republican. She's very open. Well, she is.
Yeah.
There's nothing. That's fine.
Like, she doesn't like the Donald at all.
Right. Well, there are a number of Republicans who would fall in that category. But I'm curious, like when people like what the audience, and just text in name if you would, because I'm curious who is. In people's minds, like somebody that they feel is truly fair.
You know who else I like? And it's a Fox News guy. I think, and I watch on Sundays.
You're going Chris Wallace.
Chris Wallace, I think, for what I've seen, I don't watch all the shows, but I feel like he is a very fair journalist that works for Fox News. And I'm not saying that all of them aren't, but I think some of them are more commentators, and they're giving their opinion. But I feel like Chris Wallace is pretty down the middle.
Dick Morris is the one who had Romney. That's right.
He's a little slice of crazy, Dick Morris. You know who I used to like when he was before he was texting nudes of himself? Anthony Weiner. And I've seen him like as a guest a couple of times because at least he doesn't hide his views. Like he's a smart guy. I disagree with him pretty much across the board, but he doesn't hide what he truly believes. That's what I want out of a commentator. Yeah, put out there something I might disagree with and try to win me over, and I'll listen. But don't hide what your true beliefs by kind of taking a different route to get to your point. You know, I think there's a lot of that going on. And when I talk to my liberal friends, I always find, you know what, there's somewhere in the middle that we all agree on. And it's like we can't, as a society now, at least based on the way it's covered in the media, that part should be a building block for all of us to come together. And we never get to the part where we all agree on this percentage of whatever the issue is.
Caller Ellen, who is certainly informed, says, I've never heard of the person, so I'm embarrassed. Is it Michael Gerson? Gerson? G-E-R-S-O-N? And David Brooks. I'll have to look those up. CMOS, would you look those gentlemen up?
Gina Gershon?
Boy, I like that Gina Gershon. Holy moly, cockatoli. Always likes to play a bicurious or bisexual character. Boy, she's beautiful. Body's like pow, pow.
May I pose this question? And we're talking about
bound with
media,
Jennifer Tilly.
We're talking about media bias. I know, Doug, we were arguing about that the other day. But we had Dana Lash on the other day. And I feel like all of us agreed that morning that talk radio is almost solely conservative. And that's fine. So if you have basically the entire medium almost of radio, you have Fox News. There are some conservative websites and such out there. I mean, I just don't see this overwhelming liberal bias that a lot of people cite. And I understand some TV networks are. I 100% agree with that. But again, if you basically own the entire medium of radio, you have Fox News, which, by the way, people watch about three times as much as MSNBC and 2.5 times as much as CNN. I just don't think that it's skewed that much, really.
Here's why I say it. I agree with you. Talk radio, news talk, is almost all conservative because it works for whatever reason.
And a lot of people
they tried, you know, liberal talk shows, and for the most part, whatever, it never gets traction. By the same point, comedians, and I'll agree with this, you don't find outside of Dennis Miller too many conservative comedians because it doesn't work for some reason. And you know what? If I'm watching a comedian, I find the guys that are more to the left to be funnier for whatever reason. I can still like a comedian even if he's ripping Republicans. I get it. He's a comedian. For some reason, that works better. And I'm not talking about the cable news, which, you know, clearly they all have team jackets on who they represent. Clearly. I'm talking about just in stuff you read online from legitimate news sources or from network news. I think there is a bias to the left. I think a lot of them have thrown in with Hillary. And, I, you know, to me, it's easy. Like, I'm the first to point out that Trump says idiotic things and we play them because they're hilarious. But I think Hillary has done a lot of things and that are questionable at the very least. And you just don't see as much hay made out of that as what you see with Donald Trump. And I think that's where the bias is. I look at Twitter and that's just one medium. But, you know, they put the top stories and it's always something disparaging about Trump and always something good about Hillary. And I think subliminally,
I don't know
the
about
main,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary has done a lot of questionable things, as you said. But I also think, I mean, we're talking about 4 years now where we've just been inundated with first Benghazi for about the first couple of years and then emails. I mean, every single day for 4 years. I don't think that she wasn't scrutinized.
One of the things I've noticed over the last few days in particular is Fox News is covering one story and CNN is covering another story. And it's not a consistent lead.
Happens all the time.
It fits the modus operandi.
There's a story that could be the lead on MSNBC or CNN, and Fox News doesn't even carry it.
You know? I don't even watch or read MSNBC.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to lump CNN with MSNBC. I really don't. I think it's clear that MSNBC is a different ball game than CNN.
I know that the CNN morning show had been accused of being Donald Trump central because I guess they had him on a lot because he was probably good for ratings. That's why they did it. But I would say even CNN, generally speaking, in my opinion, leans to the left. I'm not saying it's over the top, but I think subtly – a lot of the major media has been backing Hillary.
Streaming, so I'm a bit behind, but John Dickerson is very good. Yeah, he's an up-and-comer. Are you familiar with him, the cat?
I think so.
Host of Face the Nation, and I was listening to him this week. He was on Axelrod's podcast. Very good interview. Not finished with it yet, but he seems good. I don't get the up-and-coming star thing, but, you know, as far as quote-unquote down the middle, I get that sense when I watch him on Face the Nation. Let's see, Jake Tapper. How do you feel about Jake Tapper?
I think he's a little biased, but I enjoy watching him. I don't have a problem with him at all.
Yeah, I think he's a bit biased. To me, he comes across a little smug to me.
Now, you know about me or Jake Tapper?
Both.
Joe Scarborough, host of Morning Joe.
Don't care. He comes across a little too pompous for me.
Here's what I don't like.
Talking about me or talking about Scarborough?
Scarborough.
Again, both.
And Charlie.
Here's what I don't like, though. And I was watching all the convention coverage. I don't like when after a speech, it's just talking points. Like, I actually want a liberal talker to say something negative about liberals or something positive about conservatives. I don't like after the speech how you go to the pundits,
right.
And it's literally
that's what I'm saying.
Line up and
that's what
and
I'm
draw
saying.
Your
so,
weapon.
So that's what
I
I'm
hate.
Saying. That's why, to me, those who you know, oh, I liked that, even though that – because there were a lot of positive comments regarding Ivanka Trump and the Trump family, really, that whole week in Cleveland on their speeches. Again, the content – and that's an odd thing to me, that somebody goes up and they speak well. And they go, I mean, that person should be present. I'm like, all they did was make a speech, and if you can read well – and speak, that doesn't necessarily mean you have, you know, a variety of capacities that would make you qualified to handle economics, foreign policy, and be turned to as a leader in a time of crisis. So, whatever, neither here nor there, but they did deliver. I thought Ivanka's speech was outstanding. I truly did, even if I disagreed with a number of the points. Same with, I think, many would say Michelle Obama's speech was great, even if they don't like Barack Obama's policies. I don't know, but that's what I'm asking. My point is somebody who you watch and you're like, I'm anxious to hear. Like Strauss, to me, as a writer, I was intrigued to see what he would write or what he would say on the show because I didn't know where he'd be coming from. But I knew that it wouldn't just be said for effect. Now, I think whatever the hell he would do on Twitter, I still don't understand, and obviously it's an answer I'll never get. But that, to me, was kind of WWE. But when he would write his columns and when he would be on the show, you know, minus jousting with you on rights holder Macarena.
Or coins, commemorative
coins.
I used to get him mad.
He had, you know, he had an informed opinion, and you wouldn't know where it was going to be. You know, whereas you can turn on, you know, pick whichever cable host and some columnists or talk show hosts, and you already know where it's going to go. And that, to me, is rather boring. Because it's not, like Doug, obviously super conservative. But even Doug, you know, is anti-gun. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, pro-environment or anti-global warming, which does not match up with...
Because that's what my problem with team ideology is. I don't know anyone, that, you know, that if you're just being true to what you believe, can match up with one party on everything. But with team ideology, it doesn't matter. You have to back your team to make sure your team wins. And you watch convention coverage. You watch Fox after the Republican convention. Greatest convention ever. Not one flaw. Greatest convention ever. You watch MSNBC after the Democratic convention. Greatest convention. Not one flaw. Though Rachel Maddow did criticize Bill Clinton for the beginning of his speech, but still gave him an A+. but said she was offended by the beginning of his speech.
Now, to me, it was different with the Republican
that was an odd line of criticism.
Yeah. Convention in terms of coverage for CNN. But when you watch the Republican convention on CNN, after every speech, they went to their 9-person panel, and it was usually whether it's Anderson Cooper in the middle, and it's 8 pundits. It's 4 and 4.
It's too much.
And it was the speech was great or the speech was awful, and it was 8 people hearing the exact same words and interpreting them and analyzing them absolutely different. And that's why I just – to me, it's like just don't always align with your party. Like, can you please not just speak from your robotic, I'm a liberal, I'm a conservative.
That's where we are, and that's my biggest problem, and that's why I'm doing my best. I mean, I have a lot of problems with Hillary, and probably in the end I will not vote for her. I mean, I can't see myself – but I have been trying to hold my disdain and think about what's best for the country – as much as I possibly can, because I'm to the point where I'm just tired of team ideology, where you have to throw in, even if you don't really believe it, because that's your team.
And that's where maybe this election cycle, I don't know if it'll change things long term, but certainly you had some guys like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump on the other side that came in. They weren't your typical candidate.
That's part of why they were successful.
They obviously had a ton of traction with Trump being the nominee, and Bernie Sanders was darn close to being the nominee. Maybe it is changing a bit.
Yeah, it speaks volumes that we've gotten a couple hundred range of texts since I asked the question, and there really aren't a variety of names.
I don't think people
are making jokes, sending in like Karl Rove and stuff like that.
I don't think people look to that to a panel anymore or to one commentator to sway their opinion anymore.
That's the whole thing about bias.
I think a lot of people are like, I'm tired of the media.
If you flip through the 1,200 channels, you know, the 1,200s on UVerse, it's all the cable news networks. You could have watched the conventions on MSNBC, CNN, on OAN, on Fox. There was a channel that literally just played it. They didn't even have pundits. You could have watched it with no analysis, both conventions, and had no punditry telling you what they thought they heard. Just watch it. There's no bias there.
What are you going to learn from just, here's a speech, now what did you think? It's just a speech.
Tom Glavine going to join us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After coming up in a matter of moments. Cardinals and Braves this evening at Busch Stadium. I think the weather's going to be favorable, even though it's stormy this morning. Truman's and Soulard's a place you can go beforehand and then take their shuttle to Busch Stadium. Truman's and Soulard's the sexiest place to be this summer with A+ service from their stunning servers and bartenders. Truman's covered patio is perfect for watching the Cardinals on their outdoor TVs. Plus, if you need a ride to the ballpark, you can take their free shuttle down to the game. Sign up for Truman's Golf Tournament on August 29th to benefit Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. Truman's and Soulard, your neighborhood bar. It's 1818 Sydney Street or TrumansSoulard.com. Tom Glavine coming up. Plus, your emails for email today, the morning after at InsideSTL.com and the Bertarelli Cutlery Cuts of the week. A week from Monday, we will be at St. Albans for the 47th annual Jack Buck Golf Classic. Vogel Heating and Cooling, very involved with Jack Buck, the Jack Buck Golf Tournament. 47 years of that at St. Albans. I would really like to play in that. And I happened to see John Vogel last night, as a matter of fact, when I was out. And it's a great event, and he has a son with cystic fibrosis. And this cause is near and dear to their hearts because the money goes to raise, or the tournament goes to raise money for cystic fibrosis. Join Vogel Heating and Cooling and others on August 15th for a full day of activities. Players enjoy 18 holes of golf plus breakfast and lunch with proceeds to benefit the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. Buy tickets at gateway.cff.org. That is the Jack Buck Golf Classic week from Monday at St. Albans. The Seamaster always Seamasters, and that's the thing about the Seamaster that you love, because you know what he's going to do? He's going to Seamaster, and he is Seamastered again today by getting one of the all-time greats in the game, a Hall of Famer with the Braves and the New York Mets. An incredible career now broadcasting, in addition to the author of Inside Pitch, Playing and Broadcasting the Game I Love, which is now available. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the Appliance Discounter phone lines here on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2, Tom Glavine. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great. Great to have you with us on the show. I wanted to ask you about this before getting into the Cardinals and Braves and in the game right now. Cooperstown, you've experienced going up on that podium and you know, essentially pouring your heart out. And the Hall of Fame ceremonies a couple of weekends ago, I really, really enjoyed hearing from Mike Piazza and Ken Griffey Jr., and I thought they did an outstanding job. You're seeing it from the perspective of, A, guy who played against those guys, but B, knowing what it's like to be up there and pour your heart out. What did you think of this recent Hall of Fame weekend?
I thought it was great. You know, I agree. I think both guys did a great job. You know, did a super job of certainly going through or chronicling their career a little bit and highlighting the folks that helped them out, which, you know, obviously we all had. I mean, the hard part, I think, when you do that is trying to condense, you know, 20 plus years in the big leagues and really, you know, another 15 or 20 years playing either minor league ball or high school ball or little league ball and, you know, highlighting the folks that helped you along the way, because, you know, there are many and we all had somebody at different levels that were very instrumental in terms of our career, whether it was a little league coach that taught you the joy of the game, or a minor league coach that helped you with something, or a big league coach that you know, helped you along the way. I mean, we've all had it. So, you know, that was the challenging part, at least I felt in my speech, was trying to make sure you hit all those points. But I think going back now, it's funny, when I went in, you know, all the guys that were there were quick to tell you, you know, look, enjoy this year. It's about you and what have you. But when you come back after and you've been inducted, it's a lot more fun and a lot more relaxing, and it couldn't be more true. It's been so much easier going back the last 2 years as an inductee, and it's actually been kind of fun for the last couple of years watching the guys who are going in, seeing their nervousness throughout the weekend, and really seeing their reaction on the bus over to the ceremony. When you make that last right-hand turn that brings you into the field and you see how many people are there, that's the moment where it hits you, where it's like, oh my God. And it's kind of been fun watching the excitement / panic for the guys that are going in and having to deliver speeches.
I think our listeners remember you as a dominant pitcher, and it's something you touch on in your book, but you were also selected in the NHL draft, and many years ago you had to make a decision. You chose baseball. How did you come to that decision?
You know, it was just one of those things that it was really through the process of elimination. You know, I loved both sports as a kid and certainly through high school. And, you know, my whole college process was trying to go somewhere where I could play both sports. I wasn't ready to give either one up at that point in time. And, you know, I may have been naive in thinking I could play both sports at the college level. But I think back then it was probably a little bit more doable than it is in today's world. But, you know, I wanted to do both, so that was my goal. But then, you know, once I got drafted in baseball in particular, it became more of an exercise of, you know, do I want to sign with the Braves and go play baseball, or do I want to go to college? At that point in time, it wasn't so much baseball versus hockey. It was more baseball versus going to college. And, you know, when I sat down and really kind of looked at both sports and looked at the opportunity to play minor league or get into professional baseball versus going to college, you know, it was just one of those things that seemed to make sense, being a second round pick, that, you know, I'd want to try and pursue the baseball side of things. And certainly I think when I looked at both sports and played the pros and cons of both sports, I was a left-handed pitcher, and that gave me an advantage in baseball that I didn't have in hockey, so I knew that was something I needed to try and make use of.
You know, more and more it seems that when a kid shows promise in a certain sport, they want them to specialize in that sport and play it year-round, and you don't see as many kids playing, you know, a bunch of different sports. Is that a mistake if that's the direction we're headed?
It's funny. That's a big debate we're having here in Atlanta now. So, you know, Fox Sports, who I do the games for in Atlanta, is doing a big four-part series on travel ball and specialization and year-round and all that stuff. And, look, I'm not a fan. You know, I mean, I think that we're making it more and more difficult on our kids nowadays to enjoy being kids. And you know, whether it's baseball or football or, you know, basketball, you name it, the thought to that at 12, 11, 12, 13 years old, you're having to specialize, to me, is just crazy. Now, I know there's some kids out there that, you know, play one sport and that's the only sport they like and that's what they want to do. I get that. But I think that too often now, these sports, the coaches are making it difficult for the kids to play multiple sports, you know, and so much of it, I think, is feeding on the emotions of parents to try and do everything it is for their kid to play at that quote unquote next level. Now, you know, when people talk about next level, you immediately think, oh, you're going to play college, Division I college, or you're going to play professional. Well, not everybody's going to do that. For a lot of kids, high school might be the highest level they're ever going to play at. And even that is a select group of kids that play high school sports. So, you know, to me, like I say, we're getting away from letting the kids enjoy being kids, expose them to multiple sports. I think it makes them better all-around athletes. But like I said, I don't know that I fault the kids or fault the parents, because I think in so many cases they're being led to believe that if they don't specialize at an early age, the kid next door is, and that kid's going to pass you by and your kid's going to be left in the dust. And I think as parents, we're all guilty of wanting to do everything we can for our kids to help them succeed. And if we're led to believe that if we're not playing year-round like everybody else, our kid's not going to not get an opportunity, what are you going to do? You know, most parents are going to fall into the trap of, well, I have to do that. And I think for guys like myself and so many other guys that you hear that played at a professional level or even a college level, none of us would say, hey, we're going to have our kid play a sport year-round or we're going to specialize at a young age. We all say that we're going to expose them to many things because we've been through it, but it seems as though the organizations and the coaches are making that more difficult for the kids and the parents.
Tom, I think a lot of people remember the incident where Deion Sanders dumps the Gatorade jug on Tim McCarver, and I see in the book that you discussed kind of the media circus surrounding Deion Sanders when everybody was discussing whether he should play football and baseball and when he should go to each sport. What was that like kind of playing in that clubhouse when that was all going on?
You know, surprisingly, it was fun. You know, I'll be the first to say that when we signed Deion, I kind of had the, you know, what are we doing? You know, and really didn't know Deion. Only knew the Deion that you see when the red light's on the camera. And, you know, as it turned out, I couldn't have been more wrong about Deion. Deion was a great teammate. He was a ton of fun to be around, high-energy guy, you know, the kind of guy that give you the shirt off his back. But you realize pretty quickly when you're around Deion that there was a Deion that was in the solitude of the clubhouse. And then there was a prime time when a camera was in front of him. And, you know, to me, he was really the first guy who got and understood how to market himself and make himself a commodity in that way. And, you know, he was at the forefront of doing that really. And he did it really, really well. I think, you know, maybe too well, because I think the Deion, the prime time that people saw in front of the camera, that wasn't the Deion, like I said, that we saw in the quiet corners of a clubhouse or, you know, on a bus ride to and from an airport, things of that nature. I mean, he was different. But, you know, that whole marketing thing, I mean, look, it served him well. It made him a household name. And, you know, that certainly was, you know, good for him. But I do think it probably gave people a little bit different perception of him, of what he was all about. But like I said, as it turned out, you know, that's the old don't judge a book by its cover. I was certainly guilty of that when we got him. But like I said, as a teammate, he was great. He was fun to be around.
Hall of Famer Tom Glavine, our guest right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Cardinals and Braves tonight at Busch Stadium. An inadvertent ringing of the bell, the cat. Inside
that means
pitch.
A great question's coming, Tim.
Yeah, it does. Inside pitch, playing and broadcasting the game I love is Tom's book. Speaking of judging a book by its cover, I would say there's an opposite perception perhaps from fans toward one of your cohorts in that Braves rotation, and that's Greg Maddux. He appeared so studious on the mound and perhaps a little soft-spoken, but behind the scenes, different operation, if that is fair to say, and you don't mind revealing a little bit of the operation.
No, let's just say that, you know, on the mound, yes, Greg was, you know, very tactical. He was a surgeon. He was very thoughtful in what he did and how he went about his business. And in the clubhouse, he was the kind of guy you didn't want to turn your back on. So, you know, it is. It's funny how the perception sometimes of what people are is different than what you see behind closed doors. And when guys have the ability to just kind of relax and let loose and not worry about what people see or what people think. And, you know, that's the beauty of the clubhouse, is that's why it's such a, you know, a sanctitude for us that play at that level, is that's your escape. That's your area to go and get away and not worry about, you know, what somebody's going to think about you because you're playing with your teammates. And, you know, certainly in Greg's case in that clubhouse, you know, he didn't have to worry about what we thought because he knew what we all thought about him. And like I said, the kind of guy that, yeah, don't turn your back for too long on him because if he has an opportunity to pull something on you, he's going to do it. And like I said, that was part of the fun with him, certainly, and certainly part of the stuff that we used to laugh about, because the perception of what he was to people versus what we knew he was in the clubhouse was always quite different.
Hey, Tom, you were in the postseason every year, of course, minus the strike year in 94. Nobody was in the postseason from 1991 through 2002 and then back one last time in 2006. And I believe the team you faced the most in the postseason, I believe, was the Cardinals, with three series against the Cardinals, two in with the Braves in 96 and 2000, and then one in 2006. Pitching against the Cardinals postseason, when I say that, whether it be with the Mets, whether it be with the Braves, whether it be 96, 2000, or 2006, any particular moment stand out to you most from any of those series?
You know, for me, it would probably be game six or game seven, actually, I guess, in gosh, what year was it we beat those guys? 95 or 96?
96, when you guys went on to beat or you lose to the Yankees, but beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, we were
in the
down.
LCS.
Yeah, so we had lost in St. Louis to go down 3-1, and you know, by all accounts, we were dead and buried. And you know, I think we all remember that series in St. Louis, kind of listening to the TVs after we went down 3-1, and virtually, you know, hearing people talk about how that series was over and we were done. And, you know, that was kind of a rallying point for us, and, you know, certainly came back and played real well the last three games in order to get ourselves into the World Series. And for me, you know, in game six or game seven of that series, to be able to pitch that game, that's certainly a big moment. But, you know, it was always the kind of thing, you knew you were going up against a good team, a strong fundamental team, a team that was going to battle you. You know, certainly teams in those days that had good pitching, and you knew there was going to be some good matchups. But, you know, and certainly a lot of fun playing against the Cardinals on the road. I mean, the Cardinals fans obviously have a reputation for being very knowledgeable and certainly being very much into their home team, but being fair as well. And you know, that was certainly true. And it was always, you know, it was a difficult place to play, obviously, because you're on the road and you knew their affection for the home team. But it was, you know, at the same time, it wasn't the kind of place you knew you thought you were going to go into and have to listen to some of the abuse that you hear in many other stadiums across the league.
Braves in town to face the Cardinals. I think this season has been frustrating for Cardinal fans because just as it seems they may have turned a corner and are going to go on a run, they don't. Just your thoughts on what the Cardinals are doing this season, or maybe what they can be.
Yeah, you know, I think the strangest thing, really, when you look at the Cardinals is their struggles at home. You know, typically a team that's very good at home, and certainly, like I just talked about, with that home field advantage, but for whatever reason, this year it's been a struggle for them to play well at home. So that's a little bit of an oddity. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, you look at their club, and you know, there's a lot of things, obviously, to like. But look, I mean, I think that's the nature of the game now. There's so much parity in the game. There's really not a lot that separates teams from top to bottom. You know, so if you get into a situation as a team where
you know, you're not doing the things you need to be doing night in and night out, there's a lot of teams that can beat you. And, you know, like I said, I think that's true across the board in baseball now. And you know, Cardinals certainly playing in a tough division. Cubs got off to a great start and separated themselves pretty quickly and have kind of settled back a little bit. But, you know, even still, the rest of that division, you know, even though the Pirates aren't necessarily maybe doing what people thought they should be doing, they're still a good ball club. And, you know, Milwaukee's always a tough ball club at home. So, I mean, it's a tough division. You know, the kind of division that night in and night out, if you put yourself in a position where you have to get on a run, man, it's a tough division to do it in. But, you know, I think everybody who follows the Cardinals kind of looks at that team and we're all kind of waiting for that little run that they are going to get on. You know, it's like you look at them and you know they're better than they've been playing, better than what they've been doing, and you're just kind of waiting for that point in time where they reel off, you know, 15 out of 20 or something like that, and kind of get themselves in gear the way you anticipate they're going to.
Tom, how are Braves fans dealing with this rebuild? You look at the record this year, 30 games below 500. You had obviously 20 years or so where great franchise, almost in the playoffs every single year. And obviously this will pay off down the road with all the prospects, but the last couple of years have to be tough for a fan base that expects so much more.
No, it's tough. I mean, look, when I first came up here, we lost 100 games a year for the first 3 years I was here, or close to it. When you run through the success that we had then as an organization and win 14 straight division titles and, you know, like you say, seemingly in the playoffs every year, when you go back to that rebuild phase, it's not easy. You know, people get used to success. They want to see success. And they don't we don't necessarily live in a world that was maybe as patient as it was 20-plus years ago when the Braves were rebuilding and trying to get things on track. So the patience part of it has been tough. I think it's been tough, too, because it's hard for fans to look at what you're doing and grasp what you're doing when most of the moves you're making are to load up your minor league system. Again, we live in a world of instant satisfaction, and everybody wants to see things right away. Well, most of the trades the Braves have been doing have been geared towards the long term and getting young guys and replenishing their farm system and developing. So it's hard for people to understand that. When you trade a guy at the big league level and you don't get anything in return at the big league level, that's hard for people to understand a little bit. But, you know, they've made good moves. They've replenished their system. They've got a ton of arms in the minor leagues. You know, I think they're at a point now, and they've said it publicly, where they need to start getting some bats. You know, they made a good move with getting Matt Kemp, who's really a nice addition in the middle of their lineup, makes their lineup a little bit deeper for now. So, you know, I think people are starting to see the signs of some guys coming and what they're trying to do. But, yeah, there's no question the patience part of it has been a little bit difficult for people to buy into.
One of those pieces you got in the Hayward trade, Tyrell Jenkins, who I know has impressed some people. What do you guys think you have in Jenkins?
You know what? I like him. He pitched last night, as a matter of fact, and got the win. Or I think he got a no decision, but he pitched well. I like him. You know, he's a kid that certainly has an idea of what he's trying to do. But like so many young kids, it's a question of being able to go out there and do what you want to do time and time again. And you know, that's the hard part for young guys. That was the hard part for me as a young pitcher. You know, you go through the ups and downs of, you know, boy, I pitched really well tonight, and you know, what am I going to do 5 days from now? And then it's, okay, well, what was that? That wasn't anything like the last time I pitched. It's that consistency factor as a young player that's hard to get, and that's where he's at right now. And you know, I think for him, it's, and so many of our young pitchers, it's a matter of trying to get to the point where you can go out there, you know, 4 out of 5 nights and give your team a chance to win. That doesn't mean you're going to go out there and throw, you know, 7 shutout innings or anything like that, but it means you're going to go out there 4 out of 5 times, and maybe it is 7 shutout innings. Maybe it's, you know, 6 innings of giving up 2 runs, whatever the case may be. But you're giving your team a chance to win on a consistent basis, not just 1 out of 5 or 2 out of 5. But that consistency side of it, like I say, was certainly the hardest part for me to get under control as a young pitcher, and that certainly is where Tyrell is. But I like his makeup. I like his ability to go out there and compete and try to figure things out. He's a smart kid. But again, I think it's just that process of of understanding things a little bit better, and then trusting and incorporating those things on a more consistent basis.
Tom Glavine with us, the author of the book Playing and Broadcasting the Game I Love, Inside Pitch, Playing and Broadcasting the Game I Love. The broadcasting part's an important part. I wonder, when I see a guy such as yourself, obviously a Hall of Famer and quite successful, you would think logic would dictate from, you know, those of us on the outside looking in that it's like, okay, I made my money, I'm going to just hang out now and not, you know, broadcast and travel with teams and all that comes with it. But you, and then also we've seen recently Jim Edmonds here in St. Louis, he's gotten into it. He's calling more and more games. He does a hell of a job as well. Was that something while you were playing, Tom, that you thought you would get into, or is it something that you kind of stumbled into and then you go, man, I really enjoy this and want to do more of it?
You know, I think it was the kind of thing where I guess I thought I would, simply because, you know, it would be the kind of thing that people in the media would always, after an interview or after, you know, talking with them, they'd be like, you know, you ever think about broadcasting when you get done playing? You'd be good at it, or you seem like you'd be good at it, that kind of thing. So, you know, I guess people would plant that seed in my ear. And so I kind of thought it was something that I could probably do when I got done playing. But again, like you said, it's the big thing is the balance. You know, when you play for as long as I did, and certainly in today's day and age with the money guys are making, and certainly the money I made, it's the kind of thing where, you know, you don't necessarily have to do anything. But at the same time, you know, even for me, it's late to be retired at 42 years old. It's like, okay, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Yeah. You know, and you know, everybody says, oh, I'm just going to play golf every day and I'm going to do this every day. Well, you know what? That gets old, you know, and I think for me, it was an easy way, number one, to stay around the game that I enjoy. But number two, certainly have something to do and something to look forward to. And you know, it started out initially where I was doing a little bit of front office stuff and a little bit of broadcasting, and then it just kind of morphed into me doing more broadcasting. So, you know, I'll do about 30 games a year at home, no travel. You know, so it's not a crazy schedule, but it's certainly enough where it keeps me watching baseball. It keeps me involved with baseball. And more than anything else, you know, I feel like it keeps my foot in the door in case something comes along that, quite honestly, I want to do that's a little bit bigger and a little bit better. It's the kind of thing that, you know, maybe not so much for a guy like me, but for a lot of guys, once you get out of the game, it's hard to get back in.
When you speak of something a little bit bigger and a little bit better, is there something that's on your mind that you would like?
Well, you know, I've always you know, been interested in either, you know, more of a front office role or you know, even some level of an ownership type thing. So, I mean, those are things I've always been kicking the tires on. But, you know, again, it's the kind of thing that the timing would have to be right. And, you know, I've still got three kids that are home, two in college, but three that are still home. And, you know, again, it's all about the balance. You know, I mean, I played 20-something years in the big leagues, and you're on the road all the time. And, you know, that's the last thing I want to do to my wife and kids again is to say, hey, I know I did this before, but, hey, I'm going to start traveling all the time again and doing that. I don't, you know, I enjoy being home. I enjoy watching my kids play and doing all that stuff. But, again, at the same time, you know, I'm 50 years old now, so I got a lot of life ahead of me. There's still things that interest me.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've heard from guys right after they retire. Like, initially, they're like, I can't wait to just hang out, you know, sleep, play golf. And then after X amount of months or maybe a year, it's like, man, what am I going to do? I'm bored. And it almost becomes a depressing thing. And again, that's something that most people can't relate to. But I guess it's something that's somewhat commonplace for retiring professional athletes because you're still, you know, in your 30s or 40s.
No, you're still young. You still feel like you've got things to offer and, you know, things that you can do. And look, I mean, for me, you know, don't get me wrong. I love being home. I love watching my kids play. I love doing all that stuff. And I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm bored because my kids, you know, they keep me busy and there's always something to do. But I think it's more, you know, for me, it's more that how am I going to challenge my mind? You know, I don't want to, like I say, you just, okay, I'm going to go play golf again today, or I'm going to sit home and watch TV while the kids are in school all day. I mean, you know, we're so used to challenging ourselves and seeing what we can do and how far we can push ourselves and how good we can do at something. And obviously we all gravitate towards the game that we played and the game that we know. So I think it's natural that you get to a point where after a little while of being home and just kind of settling into some normalcy, so to speak, that, you know, you not necessarily that you miss playing. I don't miss playing, but you know, you certainly miss that challenge in your mind of, okay, here's a situation, and what can I do to make it better? Yeah. How can I fix it? You know, and I think that's the big thing.
A pretty cool story for you and your family. Congratulations. As I see your son Peyton committed just a handful of days ago, what, 3 days ago, to go play War Damn Eagle. He's going to go play college ball at Auburn.
Yeah, that was an exciting day, certainly for him and certainly for us as parents. You know, the kind of thing that you watch your kids, you feel for your kids, and you know, like we were talking earlier with sports now and specialization, and you know, he's at that age where a lot of his friends had already committed, so the pressure of trying to find somewhere and commit somewhere and do all that stuff certainly was weighing on him a little bit. But you know, hey, I'm happy for him. He worked his butt off and had a great summer, and you know, fortunately for him, Auburn was kind of the place he had zeroed in on a long time ago as wanting to go play, and he made it happen. So it's certainly, like I said, exciting for him, and we're proud as heck of him as parents. It's good to see.
How tough is that for him, I wonder, you know, because people are, oh, Tom Glavin's son. There goes Tom Glavin. Is that tough?
You know, it's hard because he's had to deal with it all his life. You know, whether it's, you know, when he was a younger kid playing ball and you know, the team on the other side was pumping fists because they just got Tom Glavin's kid out at the bat, or, hey, I just got a hit off of Tom Glavin's kid. I mean, you know, at 10, 11 years old, not the easiest thing for those kids to deal with, you know. And then as you get older and kids get a little bit nastier, you know, there's always the, well, you're only on this team because of your dad, or you only made that team because your dad bought this. And, you know, so he's always had to deal with that kind of undercurrent of, you know, he's not achieving success on his own will as he's achieving it because of my last name or his last name. And so he's had to deal with that. And I, you know, to his credit, he's really learned how to just kind of let it roll off and not think about it and not worry about it and just kind of go out and do his thing. And that's why, you know, in this instance, I'm proud as heck for him because, you know, I didn't, other than trying to help him out with his pitching, I had nothing to do with him getting an opportunity to go play at Auburn. That was all him. And I think that's something that, you know, he certainly has taken notice of, is trying to do things and accomplish things on his own without that underlying current of, oh, it's just your dad. So he's had to deal with it, but he deals with it well.
Final question, more nerve-wracking for you, starting game 6 of the 95 World Series or watching your son play anytime?
Without question, watching my son. When I was on the mound, good or bad, I was in control. When I have to watch and I don't have any control over what's going on, it's far more nerve-wracking.
Well, congratulations to Peyton. Congratulations to you and your family. That's a great accomplishment. And once again, for our audience, the name of the book is Inside Pitch, Playing and Broadcasting the Game I Love by Tom Glavin. Tom, thanks so much for the time this morning. We really enjoyed it and appreciated it.
Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, thanks. Tom Glavin with us on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Great interview. Enjoyed that.
Tom Glavin, thought we were famer. Great.
Well, of course.
I thought we did well. And he did even better.
Yeah.
It's not really about who we're interviewing. It's about us.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because if I said it would sound arrogant, but I agree with you. Yeah. I feel like it's about me and then you guys a little bit. A
little bit.
I almost interrupted Tom, the Hall of Famer, and said, now, can I say something, please?
You should have done that. Maybe do that when Larry Nickel calls in with a recap on Tuesday.
What about you, Charlie? If it's
what about me?
You're 50. Let's say you're 55 years old. Okay, you're between contracts. You become a big, wonderful star at the Two Fox. You're 55. Contract's up. You're talking about a new deal. Of course, they want to keep you, but now you got enough money in the bank where you could retire. Do you think you could be happy at age 55, not having a job and just doing what pleases you at that moment?
I would want to do something. I would want to work at least 3 days a week.
You want to go down to Lumiere with me and play 2-5?
I like playing poker.
All right.
Would that be enough?
But poker, you got to play like at midnight and 2 in the morning for those live games to make some money. I would have to at least get up in the morning or, you know, work for 5 hours for a few days. I feel like you have to have some motivation to get up, get out of bed, take a shower, get out of your sweatpants, and kind of get going.
What if you had like a part-time job as a hair consultant for other anchors? You are known for having great hair.
That would
be great. Could travel the country a couple days a week saying, I put a little mousse here or something.
That wouldn't be a bad.
But don't you feel like...
You have wonderful hair.
A nice radio show. I mean, let's be real. Doesn't this kind of feel like semi-retirement? If you were just doing radio...
Because I've been retired since 2005.
If you were doing just radio, nothing else. Not TV, not the business aspect. Just 3 hours of radio. I mean, come on.
I did. I had that. And truth be told, InsideSTL.com was born out of my boredom after I left TV. And all I was doing was the morning grind with the cat and Martin. And I had to kill a one-year non-compete. And I, for the first 6 months of that, it was like, oh, I'm going to go out and play golf every day. That's what I did. And then I started playing poker. I was horrible, so I was losing my ass. And I'm like, man, I got to do something else. It took 6 months. 5 months, actually, because I started.
I would think this would be the perfect amount. If you've done it for a number of years, you're a little younger than me, where, okay, I'm just going to do the radio show. I think it would be like semi-retirement, but there is a reason to shower. You know, you can't stay up till all hours because you got to get up. I think that would be like the perfect amount.
And I feel like, think about it. Let's say you're 56, 57. I mean, you could still do radio till you're, whatever, 70 years old. Do like a 12-3 show.
Doug said he wants to do it till he's 80.
There you go. But do a show in the midday where you don't have to wake up super early and you're still off before rush hour, so you're still getting home and you have your whole night.
Yeah, but think about this. Like, if you're just doing radio, you go home, you don't have TV to do, you take a little nap, and the day is yours.
So I'm saying, you mow the lawn, you watch some TV, you golf.
So should I move us to middays?
No, I like the morning.
Okay.
And to me, like, if I were just doing this, you know I have a passion for my scrapbooking.
Sure.
And, I mean, I just think of all the, I mean, I could really upgrade my scrapbooks if I were just doing
that. Yeah, that's got to be tempting. Hey, guys, bachelor party in Chicago next weekend. Big group headed there. Let's pony up with a live broadcast Friday in Chicago and get ready for some Cardinals-Cubs, boys. That's from Mike Liutz, lady friend, not to be confused with Mike Lees, lady friend. He was a netminder with the Blues in the early 80s. I would love to do that. I know our sales staff's been in touch with some bars and restaurants in Chicago about us doing the show up there. I'm sure you guys don't want to hear that. I'm going up there anyway. I'm flying up there on Thursday. At least that's the plan. Kat, you're there for your television responsibilities. Charlie's covering the Chicago Bears.
And the Cards Cubs.
And the Cardinals and Cubs. So you're going to be there the whole weekend?
I think we may only stay just Thursday night. So we're doing we're doing the Bears game because Fox 2 is broadcasting the preseason games. And then that next day, it is a 1 o'clock game, I believe 1:20. So we'll cover Cards Cubs on Friday. I don't know if we'll stay for the weekend to do the
Cubs. Let's just say hang out. Bring your lovely fiance up there and we'll pony up. Anna Marie and I have tickets and it's just right now it's just the two of us and she said, would you like to bring anybody else? I said, I don't know. All of my friends have kids. They can't get away.
You ought to get one.
Again, she get a child. I cannot get erect. That's the core issue.
You know, the Brandon Moss pulled me aside and he said,
he just pivots.
I don't want to.
that's why the cat can put up with this for 12 years.
Why don't you do the radio show when we're in Chicago?
And then no.
And then a few of the other like, yeah.
Wainwright immediately.
None of them said that.
Are you kidding me?
He's three-betting you. He's in position. You know what he's doing. Come back over the top. You'll never see a flop. Right.
I just Cats sometimes, there's always a potential for a kernel of truth in everything he says.
No, but usually there is not.
Okay.
Do you honestly think a player would pull me aside looking ahead? They just are coming off an awful road trip. They just want to get back to St. Louis. And you think a player is going to pull me aside and go, hey, I was looking at the schedule, and when we're in Chicago, you guys should do your radio show.
Hey, Adam and Losmart were saying, and I wanted to ask on their behalf, can you guys do the radio show?
Do any players, as I'm going to pivot now, do any players ever come up to you and say, hey, I listened this morning. That was funny. That was stupid, et cetera.
Yeah, they have.
Tony La Russa used to say he was borrowing Joe Pettini's car and would hear us talking. That's true.
That's true.
That is true.
I've had some players. You know.
So give us a good story. Give us an anecdote.
Well, I don't really remember because it hasn't happened this season, but in the past.
we had a bad year.
I've had players say, yeah, listen to your show. Is that it? Is that your show?
Whoa.
They're not that complimentary.
Here's my thing with this show. You have to
today's
listen.
Today's show or the show in general?
This particular show, not just today, right, but in general. You can't listen for like 12 minutes and appreciate it. You can't listen for, I think, one day and appreciate it.
I actually had somebody who we all would know, but I probably shouldn't name the person's name, who was trying to get us to their station. And he said, I'm playing this for our executives, which were located in another city. But I told them they have to listen to more than one show because if you just listen to one show, you would say it's the worst show you've ever heard. Nice. And this was somebody trying to hire us.
For 20 years, Jim Rome has said, just give us 2 weeks. The first day, you're not going to like it. You're not going to get it. Give us 2 weeks, clones.
See, JHE, when representing Tim's business, right, we go to the FMs and we say, look, you can't listen one day or two. You give us 10 years. You got to listen
you'll
10
get
years.
It,
it's a full
we'll get
decade.
There. Then we'll you'll get there. It. Tim, my fiance and I have no kids. We are DTF if you don't look me in the eye. That's from caller Douglas.
I don't know what that is.
I've got a condo downtown on Michigan Avenue that you can use for the weekend, but it'll cost you Doug's cell phone number. Man, our listeners have multiple properties right on Michigan Avenue. Ball so hard, University.
I'll cough up Doug's
trucks drive by, it sounds like we're going under.
I like Chicago an awful lot. And a lot of people, you know, make fun of Wrigley. It's not that...
Really?
I
love it.
Well, I know media to cover stuff there isn't the easiest, but...
So yes. What? I agree. I hate when media people complain about that. Who cares?
I love the whole feel of Wrigley. I have warm memories.
When's the last time you were at Fenway? Because the Cardinals haven't played there much. I think they were there next year, though, right?
Yeah. Well, 13.
But I've been in both 13. The Wrigley and the Fenway clubhouses, and Wrigley's to me Wrigley reminds me of like a high school basketball locker room in the movie Hoosiers. Fenway, I mean, it's small, and that was 2004 in the World Series. I don't know what the hell it's like now. It might be improved. But
my enduring memory of Wrigley is there's a little walkway that goes over the concourse outside the visitors' clubhouse. And they have tarps over it, so you can't look out, but you can move it back a little bit. And there was a tour, and I was standing with the great Joe Kelly, and there was a tour of Cub fans underneath, and I said, I think you should mess with them and start yelling stuff. And to his credit, he started yelling, Cubs suck.
Nice.
And he opened the thing and was like peeking out. Can you imagine? And we did something with Matt Carpenter where we went to one of the rooftops across the street and interviewed him on top of the rooftop, and he went in his full Cardinal uniform. We walked across the street to this thing.
When he was young, right?
Cool. Yeah.
I don't think he would do that now, probably.
He might
right?
do it. For old time's sake, I'm going to pitch him that idea.
I think that's kind of a rookie thing to do. Don't you feel like as they get to be veterans, they stop having all the fun?
Lance Lynn would do it.
Think about that, Charlie.
That's true.
Hey, he had the Kolache Factory. Yeah, I think you had, probably, because they came in last week and dropped some off.
I had two of them.
Do yourself a favor. If you haven't, try a fresh kolache from the Kolache Factory. They have breakfast and lunch. A kolache is like a dinner roll stuffed with delicious combinations like sausage and gravy, jalapeno pepper, bacon, egg, and cheese, and the Philly cheesesteak. They have sweet fruit and pastry options as well. Large orders are easy. Just call ahead, and your order will be ready when you are. They also have handcrafted and roasted to perfection cat's coffee. The Kolache Factory, 2604 South Brentwood Boulevard. We have the Bertarelli Cutlery Cuts of the Week, and your emails for the email of the day. Send them in the morning after at InsideSTL.com. Text in 314-880-0808. You can also call in on that number as well. Plus, the Plow Brave has some fun with audio for you, presented by Maggie O'Brien. Seamaster, did I not have a Bomber O'Brien's up-and-coming adult film star this week? Because I didn't release one, and there have been actual texts asking where it is.
That's sad. That is really sad.
And great. I was expecting it to be on Tuesday again, but when the log came out, it wasn't scheduled.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if maybe it's ultimately a bi-weekly feature.
Once every 2 weeks.
Because there was no Bomber O'Brien's in the log Tuesday, but Maggie O'Brien's.
Wow,
was.
Wow. Well, that gives me another few days to come up with a superstar for our audience. Jill Cassidy, is she communicating with you on direct message still, or is she just fading you? Fated.
No, we haven't had much action on that front.
We got her over 4,000 Twitter followers. I feel like all we could get was at least like 10 minutes on the phone for some delightful conversation. And then McKenna Cade, I think she might already be out of the industry. You know, sometimes we're not going to hit with these investments, but we're going to make it profitable, at least a 15% return.
Do you have a software and metrics that you
use? An algorithm. I've constructed metrics. An algorithm.
Do you have schematics?
Obviously.
That's Kat's favorite word.
Schematics.
When I'm listening to the show, you say schematics about once a week, and I know you do it just because you think it's really funny. And I enjoy it. I want you to know that.
I don't think once a week is overuse.
During the whole Rams relocation, you always mention schematics when it comes to the renderings of the stadium.
Yeah, because you need schematics. If you're going to move, you're gonna eventually run into schematics.
Sure.
Two thoughts before we head to the 9 o'clock break, since it's 9:09. Anytime I mention that Anna Marie and I are childless, immediately then people text in, and as opposed to saying, yeah, we are too, it kind of sucks or whatever, not that they not have children, but that most people in St. Louis in this age range have children, and therefore it's difficult to hang out with friends, which I totally understand, I get it. For whatever reason, people don't go that route. They then offer to sleep with me. Tim, my wife and I are childless and heading to Chicago next weekend. Going to the game on Saturday's bet. Let's get drunk and get cucked. Thanks, the Rock Hill listener. Tim, if you want, we would love to hang out with you and see where it goes. So I don't understand why it goes from point A to point B, but that's where our audience is. And then secondarily, not along those lines at all, but something I had popped in my phone because I want to see it this weekend. And as I said yesterday, I just don't get drunk in St. Louis, at least very rarely. The film Gleason, Steve Gleason, I want to see it. It was released last Friday, but I don't believe it's out in St. Louis. So if anybody does know if it's being shown in St. Louis, please let me know because I've got it on my app here and I don't see it in St. Louis, even though it's been out for a week, which is odd to me. But I guess it's just one of those special releases.
Is it the Saints player?
Yeah, ALS. It's supposed to be. It's just an incredible film. And I really want to see it, and I'm upset that it isn't in St. Louis yet. At least it seems like it's not. So I don't know.
So I haven't heard of it.
There's my official APB. I see caller Adam's on hold. Anna Marie put out an APB for him last night on the fan pin, so he's there. We have the Bert Early Cutlery Cuts of the Week, and we have our email of the day. All of that coming your way on the Ryan Kelly Morning After.